Welcome to this week's edition of the Minnesota Beercast. I am Drew. That's my co-host, Schmitty.
That's me.
And we are at the Science Museum.
Yes, we are.
You may be thinking, why is a show about beer at the Science Museum?
Why not?
There's a lot of science that goes into beer.
There sure is.
But we're here for the Game Changers exhibit and some special beers that are accompanying this fantastic, really cool exhibit going on at the Science Museum.
Yeah, we've got some special guests to talk to us about the beer and the exhibit. So let's go around the table and have everybody introduce themselves. Let's start with you, Bill.
Hi, how are you? I'm Bill Manley. I'm the VP of Marketing at Surly Brewing Company.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. And I'm Joey Molt. I'm the Vice President of Visitor Experience here for the Science Museum of Minnesota.
And Ben Smith, head brewer from Surly.
All right.
Good
thanks,
to see
guys.
You guys. Thanks for coming on, giving the show a little bit of time today.
Thanks for having us on again. Well,
we've had Surly on several times before and always a welcome
drinks
guest.
A bell.
But we've not had anybody from the Science Museum on before, and we've yet to do a show from the Science Museum. So thanks for having us, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for coming out. It's going to be really fun talking to y'all.
So tell us about your role here at the Science Museum and how this all came to be.
So my role beyond talking about video games and beer?
Well, I mean, that's...
I mean, no, you can just stick to that
in
if
addition
you want.
Too, I think. You might be able to take over Drew's spot on the show if you play your cards right here tonight.
Visitor experience is responsible for everything you interact with the person at the Science Museum of Minnesota. It's in the visitor experience division. And so part of what we do is bring in the temporary exhibits that are here, like Game Changers, and we figure out how to incorporate those exhibits into the overall museum experience.
So one of the things that I always wonder, because we're members here, my family, and we love it.
Thank you.
And we see the exhibits come and go, and they're always really cool. How does that happen? Are there like roaming exhibits that shop the experience to different museums around the country, or is it something that you guys cultivate through the creative process and they're like, you know, it'd be great, a video game experience? How does that whole process happen?
So there's a number of ways that it happens, but one thing that most folks don't know about the Science Museum of Minnesota is that we're North America's largest distributor of exhibits to other museums all over the country. So that's a business that we do for other museums, and we host those exhibits here. But we also have a group of people that go out and look at different exhibits to consider for the museum, and we just think about, you know, what would make the best visitor experience, what are the things that people are interested in, and we try to secure those exhibits. It's a little bit harder than showing a film, like at a movie theater, because there are many, many copies of a film, or now in today's digital world, you can get it, whatever.
Right.
But with exhibits, there's only one. So you have to be pretty competitive, but we're fortunate that we are the Science Museum of Minnesota. We have a really great reputation in the field, so we're able to get a lot of the exhibits that we are interested in hosting.
Let's talk about this Game Changers exhibit. Was this something that was cultivated here locally? Is this something that has been around? How did this come to be?
So this exhibit was produced by the Australian Center for the Moving Image, and has been touring for a couple of years, both internationally and domestically. And it is a exhibition that tours through the 40-year history of video games, through the story of 30 video game designers. And because we're the Science Museum of Minnesota, you don't just get to learn about the games, you get to play over 100 different video games in the exhibit.
Yeah, you guys are lucky I'm sitting here right now. I walked through there, and I saw about 50 games that I wanted to play, a few games from my childhood that I'd forgotten about, that I know it's like Altered Beast.
Altered Beast is a great one.
Oh, I used to love that game. It's really, really fantastic. And yeah, it's incredibly interactive, incredibly hands-on. I mean, there's controllers and you can play whatever you want. I love that video games have finally been around long enough that they can actually be treated like, you know, the art form and the medium that they really are.
Yeah, and not only an art form, but kind of the cultural impact that they have as well. One of the really fun things about this exhibit is that I'm of the older generation, so the stand-up video games like Robotron and Defender are the games that I remember. But as I walk through the exhibit with my family, I'm the expert in that part of the exhibition, but as we move through the exhibit, that role of expert transfers to my kids, and they're telling me about, you know, the games that they know and showing me how to play Minecraft and stuff. So it's great in that it's an exhibit where everyone's the expert, and everyone has a story to share or an expertise to share with the group.
So are the games mainly like your stand-up, like arcade games, or are they? Do they run the gamut? Are you going to have your console games? I know, thinking of the games that I enjoyed, like with my family growing up, like we played a ton of Atari. Like we would whoop my dad in like Popeye and Joust and you know, Pitfall, classic stuff like that. But then even as we got older, it was, you know, Madden. You know, Dad, no, you got to hit circle twice. You got to spin. You know, stuff like that. It was, you know, just fun family time playing video games. Do you have, what's kind of the sweet spot, or does it just run the whole spectrum?
So the exhibit is covering the entire 40-year history of video games, and so it does run the spectrum. The exhibit is divided into three main sections. The first is Arcade Heroes, which is the stand-up video games. You got your Tempest, your Centipede, Donkey Kong's in there. It moves into a section called Game Changers, which is kind of what I like to say is when the video games move from outside of the home to inside the home. So you got the, you know, the Lego Batman, Lego Star Wars, Sonic, Sims, games like that, Diablo, moving into those. And then the final section of the exhibition is about indies, so independent game designers that don't have the support of a major corporation behind them. So you think of games like Angry Birds or Fruit Ninja, or a game that I've recently fallen in love with called Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy. And if you have a chance later, you must go play that game in the exhibit. But there's those kind of, and an all-time favorite of mine, Prapper the Rapper, which is an ultimate classic, I think.
What is it?
In that section, yeah.
What is it?
Prapper the Rapper.
Prapper the Rapper?
Yeah.
I am like mushroom-headed dude. You know,
yeah.
I saw, I don't know if it was Guitar Hero or Rock Band. I saw one of those variants in there.
Yep, Rock Band's in there, yep.
Yeah, a little room where a bunch of people were in there playing. One of the karaoke games was in there.
Yep.
Really great examples of, you know, things families can play together. Adults can play with their kids and have just as much fun as the kids are having. And it's neat to see that, you know, getting the recognition, you know, through an exhibit like this.
Totally. And it's the great thing too is that, you know, is that the exhibit isn't just for kids, isn't just for families. You know, like as we're sitting here and having a beer and talking about video games, that's something that, you know, I can bring my friends and, you know, destroy them in Rubbertron and have a really fun time. So that's it's an exhibit that really works for all audiences and everybody.
And I love the I read the thing as you're coming in, and it's absolutely 100% true. You know, we can all name our favorite movie stars, movie directors, TV stars, you know, all of these content creators, you know, that we love. But can you really tell me who designed your favorite video game?
Eugene Jarvis. Oh, sorry.
Besides you, yeah. Tell me who designed your favorite video game. And when you think about how much entertainment they provide us, like I'm in the middle of playing God of War.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm ever going to finish this game.
Yeah.
It's so deep and it's so complex and there's so much going on. I couldn't tell you who is responsible for bringing it to me. And those designers should get that kind of recognition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I've got God of War in my queue. I haven't got to it yet.
I'm
in the middle of Spider-Man.
Spider-Man was great too.
I'm on expansion pack 1, and I've got 2 more after that, and Spider-Man. So
Spider-Man and God of War are reason enough to go buy a PS4.
I love this conversation. I love the places we go on this show sometimes. Let's talk about. I mean, you guys have had a chance to walk through the exhibit. I have not had much of a chance. Do you guys have some favorite games that are in the exhibit? Ben, Bill, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm kind of an old school guy too. Like, I loved going to the arcade as a kid. Mm-hmm. It was a social experience. It was fun going out with friends. There used to be a huge arcade at the rolling rink out in Wilmer, where I'm from, and
yeah.
we'd play a lot of Space Invaders and kind of the classic games that you'd see. So seeing those as you walk in brings back a lot of nostalgic memories of my childhood and growing up in rural Minnesota. So
going with the pocket phone quarters.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a big fan of that. I kind of got
pocket
less and less.
And some white snake on the
exactly.
Get your jean jacket on and your high tops.
That's amazing.
Is there a better feeling as a kid than being able to put a $5 bill in the change machine?
It's awesome.
And
you know,
all the quarters to come.
And they'd have like the tabletop Miss Pac-Man at the pizza parlor. Those kind of games, man, are awesome.
That was really good. Let's take a break and hear from Bill after the break about what his favorite game is in the exhibit. And let's talk about the beer a little bit. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM from the Science Museum of Minnesota.
to the Minnesota Beercast from the Science Museum of Minnesota. We are here for the Game Changers exhibit. Plus, there's some beer to be talked about, too. Surly's here with us.
When we left off, we teased Bill's favorite game out of the exhibit. Did you have a favorite one?
I'm also kind of getting to that age where I'm a little bit of a video game tweener, you know, and like I remember coming up as a kid, like when arcades were still like a thing.
Yeah.
But then, like, I mean, I really got sucked into the original, like, NES, man. I'm like a kid of the 80s. And so, Super Mario Brothers 2 was my jam. I mean, that was like the first game I ever remember, like, beating all the way to the end. I'm the god of the world! And I'm also old enough to the point that when I needed to start using my index fingers for controllers, I sort of lost the plot a
way
little
too
bit.
Way too much coordination for you.
Exactly. I killed those brain cells a long time ago, I'm afraid.
Yeah, the N64, once they like you added like a middle joystick, I'm like, this is way too much for me.
Yeah, no. I like wasted my entire like first 2 years of college on GoldenEye, and yes. I just never got really good at it.
Oh, the GoldenEye tournaments. Oh, get a case of Natty Ice and just play GoldenEye.
Yeah, have that one friend that just sits and snipers everybody.
Yeah,
like,
I was just about to say that same thing. There was always the one guy in the corner. You're like, shut up, Ed. Sitting on top of that slay and learn how to view the world through a sniper scope.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I never played GoldenEye. That was one game that I missed out on. Oh. It was just like in that window of time where I just wasn't really playing video games.
Everybody's got those
way.
Like the blind spots there.
Yeah. I grew up with the arcades. I used to go to the arcades every chance I got with a pocket full of quarters. Tempest, Zach Saxon was one of my favorite games. Loved that. And then as the console started to come out, I was a Super Nintendo kid.
Oh, yeah.
Was
sure,
mine.
Yeah,
sure. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out probably wasted my entire junior year of high school.
The original Mario Kart, too, was also one of those games that was like, man, I probably spent more of my life playing that than I probably ought to have.
It's a great game to play with your friends.
Yeah.
And that's one of the fun things about the evolution of video games is, you know, how much it brings people together. I mean, you know, my son is 19 years old right now, and his social life is essentially, you know, playing games with his friends, either in person or, you know, online. You know, I mean, there's hardly a moment that goes by when he's at home that he's not interacting with a handful of people, enjoying some game, you know, on his computer with his friends. And you know, we sit here and think he's like, oh, get out of your room and go do something. It's like, no, he's actually being social.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And you think about the role that video games have played in all of our lives. And, you know, you kind of pull the old man, get out of your room, go. But you know what? Here we all are talking about, I played video games. I was at the arcade. And it's like, you look at the younger generation. They're doing the exact same things we did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would bet. Just doing it with better technology.
Right? Yeah. Right?
For sure.
Just more access to everything else that goes on in the world around us. I bet a video game aficionado could probably, if you told them what our favorite games were, they could probably peg exactly what age range we were in, right? Like if I said I loved playing Pit Fighter and then Mortal Kombat, they're like, yeah, yes. You were probably born right about here, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I'm sure.
I love going to the arcade and playing those games. I used to go to the Aladdin's Castle up at Maplewood Mall.
Oh, man, Aladdin's Castle.
Yep. Yeah. Back in the day.
Every mall used to have an arcade.
Yeah, dude.
Staple. It was mandatory.
Every single mall.
Every roller skating rink, every bowling alley. I mean, like that, you know, I mean, that it was like the icing on the cake for like the things that...
Even to this day, every once in a while, I'll find myself in the mall and I'll be thinking, I wonder where the arcade is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The pinballs, though, were a big part of the arcade. And I don't know, do you guys represent any of the kind of those skill pinball game machines at all in there? Or is it really mainly the console stuff?
It's mainly console stuff. There aren't any pinball games in the exhibit.
Very cool. We're here recording on a Wednesday night, Joe, and this is a members night. And it's really neat because it's kind of a different atmosphere. Can you talk about what a members night is here at the Science Museum?
Sure. So we're always looking for ways to thank our members for supporting the museum. And one of the ways that we can do that is through having special kind of these exclusive nights where we open up the museum just for them. And they can come in and kind of have a private exclusive experience of getting the exhibits and films just to themselves. So we're trying more and more ways that we can kind of recognize and thank our members.
How often do you have these nights?
This is what actually the first one of this particular type that we've had. But we also have a number of other types of events that we invite our members to, just to say, you know, thanks for being a member and here's something special for you.
And if folks are interested in becoming a member of the Science Museum, how can they go about doing that?
So they can go online just to our website, smm.org. They can call us at 651-221-9444 or just visit, and they can visit that day and put the price of their membership put the price of what they paid to visit the museum towards the membership.
Yeah, I would highly recommend. Like I said, our family has been members for a long time now. It's a great opportunity. Come and learn some things, have some fun, and enjoy some family time.
It's a real treat. You know, if you live in this area, if you live in the Twin Cities, and you haven't been to the Science Museum, and I don't care if you got kids or don't have kids, I mean, it's a must visit. You've really got to come check it out. It's a fantastic. The entire layout is fantastic.
So our video game conversation thus far has been fueled by Warp Zone Pilsner. The fine folks of Surly have made this beer to, honor this exhibit here. Why don't you tell us about this beer a little bit, Ben and Bill, and kind of walk us through the inspiration and the creation.
Yeah, so we started talking about the collaboration and making a beer, and I think we gravitated towards Pilsner pretty quickly. We've been playing around with Pilsners in our beer hall for a little bit, and I've been dying to make one in a package so that we can put out in market. This was a great chance and opportunity to do that. And it's a classic German-style Pils, 100% malt, no adjuncts here, using Spalt Select hops. So this is very classic. We didn't really tweak the style or recipes very much. We're using Weyermann Pils malt, a little bit of French Pils malt to give it a nice bready, kind of a different malt character. And it turned out really great. And one of my favorite parts is the label. So
yeah.
The Warp Zone Pils.
The labels are amazing.
There's four different labels for the cans.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
Let's hear the story.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
The story, and there's four different cans, and the cans sort of span the era of video games as well. And so the whole story is that it's some sort of like flying, fighting game a la kind of Space Invaders-ish.
Yeah.
And the first game is kind of like, you know, stand-up Pong era, very minimal graphics, and then it kind of moves into like 8-bit world, and then the same storyline moves into slightly better graphics,
right,
with like the PS2 style, and then it sort of gets nerfed at the end toward like like a handheld like phone style, like Candy Crush
mobile game.
Yeah. And so it's all the same game through different eras, and I mean, I think that's one of the reasons we were really kind of drawn to do this project to begin with. I mean, we're talking about like the arc of kind of video game creation in the 70s and kind of like moving through into legitimacy that it's got today. And like craft beer really kind of follows that same arc, right? I mean, you talk about those early pioneers like the Anchors and the Sierra Nevadas of the world, and then that kind of like move up into the first craft beer boom, and then that kind of wave receded a little bit, and then the second craft boom, and that's sort of where we are. And then to today where craft beer is just, you know, it's part of the culture.
Are we at the handheld gaming mode of the craft beer?
We're there. I mean, we're in the way that like it's accessible to everybody who cares to have access to it, which is great. You know, I mean, like there's more to it than ever. And I think it's sort of funny that the beer itself is a, you know, classic kind of German style too. That it's timeless in a way that it like pays homage to the early days, but it still works and it still like resonates with everybody through all of those eras, can recognize that as, yeah, that's damn good beer.
Was that part of the conversation of how you landed on going with a very classic Pilsner?
Most definitely.
For this type of partnership?
Yeah, most definitely. It just seemed to fit every kind of niche that we talked about. You know, we didn't want to do anything really high ABV, anything too hoppy. We wanted it to be very approachable for everybody, kind of what you mentioned earlier about this, you know, whether you've been playing video games for 30 years or you're a young kid just getting into it, Pilsner's a pretty approachable style for everybody. So.
By kid, he means definitely 21 and over.
Yeah,
by the way.
Of course. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, something you could drink with your 8-year-old while you're playing Minecraft. I'm kidding.
Joking. So tell us about the launch details. You guys are going to launch this at Up Down Arcade Bar.
Yep. Next Monday is we're having a launch party at Up Down, and it's also kind of a fundraiser for the museum and everything that the museum is doing. And that was a really nice way that we can kind of give back to, frankly, the project is pretty darn simpatico. It's right in our wheelhouse, so it didn't take too much arm twisting to get. You're like, oh man, video games and beer? Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're gonna do that. And so we're trying to figure out like what we can do to kind of give back to the museum and kind of give back to everything that they're doing. And so the proceeds from all of the merch, and then we're having the fundraising event at Uptown next Monday, and then four packs of this beer. Each four pack will have one each of the four different labeled cans are gonna start filtering into the market starting next Monday as well too. So we're just about hitting it, and hopefully we can get enough excitement and interest back to come to actually get as many people are who care to come and see the exhibit like through the doors.
That's awesome.
That's the real win here.
That's awesome. I love that. Any chance of this lasting beyond just the life of the exhibit here?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
Yeah, we're super stoked with the beer. We're stoked with the brand too. And so I mean, like we're talking about maybe even doing it as like our summer variety pack release or finding some home for it edition.
I'll tell you what,
we're really excited.
The can design alone will fly off the shelf.
We feel pretty good about it.
It's great. There's shirts too that kind of mirror the artwork, and again, proceeds from those are going to help the Science Museum. So the whole package deal is pretty cool.
Yeah, very good cause. Let's take a break. We're going to come back after this. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5.
Back to the Minnesota Beercast. We are at the Science Museum of Minnesota for the Game Changers exhibit, plus some amazing Surly beers that are here and collaborating with this exhibit. Before we get back into this, though, I need to remind you guys there are still some spots available for our Oktoberfest trip to Germany, to Munich.
Nice.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty amazing. You go to MinnesotaBeerCast.com or go to the Minnesota Beercast Facebook page. There's a link there where you can look at the entire itinerary, or you can download the iHeartRadio app and go into our archives there and listen to the show where we talk through each day by day by day, and it really is a stunning itinerary.
It's going to be amazing. My lovely bride has been checking out different places to eat. She made me get measured for some Lederhosen.
That has nothing to do with the trip, though.
No.
Nothing to do with the trip.
Wednesday again, is it?
True confession, that happened before the trip was booked, but I just figured I'd throw it in there. Regardless, it's going to be a fun time.
It's going to be a really good time, and it's a one price that includes airfare, transportation, and lodging when we're there. A bunch of meals are included. We're going to go drink some beer made by monks that have been brewing the same beer for over 1,000 years. I don't know if the actual beer we're going to drink is going to be 1,000 years old.
I would drink it.
I mean, sure. Give it a shot. Right.
When in Rome or Germany.
Yeah. It's not going to kill you.
And if it does, I mean, you got to go sometime. nobody gets out alive, Drew.
So, go sign up. Go join us. It's the last week of September going into the first week of October. It's like, a six-day six-day trip.
It's going to be amazing. We would love to have you join us. I can
really
think
would.
Of nothing better than having a wonderful vacation with our friends and listeners. Go check it out and join us on a wonderful vacation to Oktoberfest. Let's get back into the show. We're joined by a friend of the show, Joe Shea from Left Hand Brewing. How you doing, Joe?
I am doing fantastic.
Good. Don't be shy. Be sure to crack wise as we record the last couple segments here. We're going to get into a couple of your beers, but we've already got a couple poured from Surly. Let's talk about those next. What have we got here in front of us, Ben?
We've got Sound Into Color, which is our BC Small Batch release of the month. It's an Imperial Kettle Sour, tart cherry, raspberry, really nice fruit profile, very easy to drink. The alcohol is very sneaky. It's just about 8%.
Oh, I would not have guessed 8%.
Yeah, so it can sneak up on you, but just a really lovely beer. It's got a great kind of light red, dark pink color to it. It's just beautiful beer. So hopefully this beer will bring in spring and change the weather for all of us as we drink it all month.
I love that beer. I love a beer that's got that nice tart, fruity characteristic to it, but is not, like you said during the break, that enamel stripping kind of vinegary sour pucker
It's a kettle sour, but it's not super tart. It's not extremely down on the pH level, so still very easy to drink.
Yeah. Usually, I was telling you during the break, when I see a beer get poured that's this color and it's a very raspberry-ish color, you know, it's just not my palate so much. Yep. But this is beautiful. It is a fantastic beer. Well done.
You know, the sour aficionados, the real true believers, get I think some of them get a little uppity when it comes to kettle sours. Do you have any thoughts, opinions on that? I mean, clearly, you're brewing one. Hey, right?
They're different things, different occasions. I mean, you know, it's like the complexities of like barrel aged, like lambic quote unquote style sours, like wild ales, full like bacterial fermentations. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that can't be mimicked. You know, but like there's a time and a place for that sort of thing, you know, and it's like if you want that kind of like super deep complexity, that's kind of one thing. That's not for everybody. It's a lot less controllable. The price points tend to really skyrocket with beers.
You've
like
got a
that.
Lot of time.
They're a lot less you know, a lot less forgiving. Yeah. I mean, I would say that kettle sours, by and large, are a little bit more like approachable, a little bit more friendly, while still kind of delivering on the full range of flavor spectrum that you want out of you know, quote unquote sour beers. And I keep doing air quotes, which is not helpful on the radio. but the thing is, like, I mean, people tend to classify like sours as like a beer style, which is not giving enough kind of credit to the depth and breadth of the techniques it takes to make beers that have a certain amount of sourness to them. But it's just like it's a different kind of color, a different tool in your you know arsenal to kind of use to like paint flavors together and find things that work.
Right.
And in this, I mean, like the tartness and that kind of sourness adds the complexity of the natural fruit flavors, and it makes them feel, you know, rounder and a little more complex. But it's still not one of those things that you need to invest the whole, you know, a ton of commitment into. It's still still a beer at the end of the day, and it's something that you want to drink and can finish a can of in a sitting.
Yeah, you can finish a can and one another.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
You know, with a lot of sours, you know, you finish a pint, you finish a sour.
You finish an 8-ounce pour, and you're like, cool, I'm good
for the next couple
of months on this. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
And as a brewer, it all comes down to intent, too. I mean, we have beers like Pentagram. We just came out with a beer called Chroma Key, which is a blueberry basil sour aged in white wine barrels. It's complex. It's been in barrels for a long time. That's a very different
What's
beer.
What's that called?
Chroma Key.
Okay.
It's on in the beer hall right now and in draft. Yes. Where those beers are meant to be complex. They take a long time to make. They're meant to be sipped and enjoyed. Where these kind of beers, in my mind, are really meant to showcase the fruit, to be like nice tartness, almost less complex and easier to drink and more enjoyable for the masses. So that's kind of the intent in this beer.
You know, that's always kind of been my take is, you know, I enjoy like the Chroma Key you described. I haven't had it, but this sounds like a very intense beer to me. Mm-hmm. And that's been my experience in those like traditional super sour beers, those wild beers. I enjoy them, but in very small amounts.
Yeah.
Like this I could have a pint and maybe have a couple pints.
I was gonna say this is very approachable for anybody. You know, kettle sours, like you said, sometimes people get something in their head that it's going to hit them right in the jowls, but it's very approachable, the fruits come out great in this, and 7.7, it could be some dangerous on some summer nights.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the next one. I think we've kind of run the gamut on that one. What's the other one we have here?
So we have One Man Mosh Pit. This is our new year-round beer offering, core brand. It's a hazy IPA. This was great. This was a lot of fun. Like, I was kind of hesitant to do these kind of beers for a while, but with you know, it was a good challenge, and with challenge comes opportunity. So, like, we didn't have to beat anyone to the punch with this beer. So we took a lot of time. We took about 7 or 8 months to do a lot of R&D. We did about 9, 10, 11 different batches through the beer hall, played around with recipes, with process, with hop profiles. The challenge for us at Surly is we want to compete with the guys that are selling beers out of the tap room, but we also have to have beers that can last, you know, 3 months on the shelf in
shelf
Chicago.
Stable. That's a key.
So I put a lot of time and effort in, you know, looking at the science of beers, looking at old beers like Witz and Hefeweizen's, looking at new hop research out of OSU and Shellhammer's lab, and trying to put those things together in a beer that's going to drink great fresh, but also after 2 or 3 months stand up, be both flavor stable and haze stable. And I think we've really done a great job. I really love the beer.
It's great.
It tastes great. It's easy to drink. It's not too much on that cloying sweet side of some of the hazy beers I've had. Love the hop profile. So yeah. I'm really excited. I'm glad that we had the time to really put in the research to make this beer right.
No, I like it. I'm not a huge fan of the style. If anybody listens to the show, I think not a week goes by that we don't talk about the style in one form or another, and we usually do it in some sort of poking fun fashion. Just cause,
except for me.
You know.
Except for me. I like the style. I'm a fan.
It's easy to be snarky about, but you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it's what people want, you know.
But this, I think this is executed well. I really appreciate the tropical notes. It's very, very reminiscent of you know, like an orange juice, maybe with some pineapple in it.
Yeah,
definitely. It's definitely hazy, but it's not like super thick, like crazy haze.
When I think of haze, I look at there's the kind of beers where they either reflect light or suck light. Mm-hmm. You know, and like the hazes that suck light in are kind of ugly and dull and dense. And the ones that are really brilliant, and it's kind of the Instagrammable hazy beers, the ones that, you know, are reflecting the light, look bright, and that's kind of what we're going for. So it's weird when you think about, as a professional brewer who spent so much time and effort making bright, beautiful, clear beers.
But
again, it was a good challenge for me personally and for my team to come up with a beer that kind of hit all those notes. And again, it looks great.
But we've really done our due diligence, too, with it. I mean, like, we've been doing prototypes and canning them for months and months and months now. And at this point, I'll take the Pepsi challenge versus most of our competitors at 60 days in the world. I mean,
I must have missed the invite for some of the taste testing and the research.
So we kind of had a secret society.
Yeah, we keep those pretty close.
When we go to break, I'm going to make sure you guys have my correct email address. So that I make sure I'm included on those in the future.
We are coming up on another break. We're going to come back and talk about some left-hand beers with Joe Shea. You're going to come back right. Oh, hold on.
I just want to, before we go, Sound Into Color, a one-man mosh pit. These are both going to be available anywhere you get Surly beer already.
Yes, sir.
And the one-man mosh pit is going to be a year-round?
Yep. One-man mosh pit will be around for the rest of the year. Sound and the Color is going to be in and out of the market pretty fast. So if you see that, I would say pick it up immediately.
Yeah, I intend to grab a few as well. So we'll be right back. This is the Minnesota Beercast, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5. We are back. Final segment of this week's edition of the Minnesota Beercast. Next week, the 23rd, Saturday the 23rd, we hope to see you. We hope you'll join us at the History Center for the Rare Beer Fest.
Yeah, man. It's going to be great.
We
love that.
This will be our fourth time doing a show from there.
I think it's our eighth.
What?
Yeah. Right. Pretty sure.
Okay. We'll go with that. Our eighth time doing a show there, even though we've only been doing the show for 4 years. But, you know, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, you guys are there every year, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Also, I think it's the sixth.
No, I'm pretty sure it's the eighth.
Is it the eighth?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I'm not listening. Yeah. it'll be my fifth, so I'm excited for it.
What are you guys bringing, Joe? Do you know?
We are bringing a barrel-aged Belgian golden ale called Aferius,
yeah.
Which I
I believe I was just talking to Mark on his podcast about, I think it's a Pinot.
Manor's optional if you guys don't listen to it. Plug for Mark's show.
I think that was a Pinot Noir barrel aged.
Nice.
Belgian golden.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with the concept of the Rare Beer Fest, it's rare beers and great food and a little, so it's a refined environment, I would say, and it's great food, great beers, and it's a lot more intimate, and it's a classy setting at the Minnesota History Center. So if you've never been there, I highly suggest that, one of the best events of the year.
Yeah.
Ben, what are you guys bringing?
We've got some rare beers that, honestly, you can only get there. So we got a couple of Bliss barrels, which are ex-bourbon barrels that have maple syrup in them. So we have a beer called Pancake Party that we literally made, I think, 4 wooden barrels of.
Drew and I just looked at each other like,
I'm sold. It's a dessert stout. It's awesome.
Right.
We sent the only other kegs we really have to Phobab last year, and that's the only other place it's been served.
Nice.
Then we have a variant of Pentagram with a metric crap ton of cherry and blueberry fruit that was put into, I think it's a port barrel. It sounds weird, but it tastes great.
Phenomenal.
And again, we had 2 barrels of that overall, so this will be one of... 2 kegs, I think, in the world.
It is a rare beer fest. So we're doing the show here from the Science Museum of Minnesota in St. Paul. We're going to be in St. Paul for the Rare Beer Fest next week. Joe Shea, you've got a ton of events in St. Paul for St. Patrick's Day. Where can folks find some awesome left-hand brews for St. Patty's Day?
Oh, yeah. So obviously, Left Hand's most known for our Milk Stout Nitro. It's top-selling American-made stout, top-selling American-made nitro beer. Internationally, we sell in... 5 continents at this point. Oh, wait, 4 continents. Excuse me. I gotta do my math. But we got a whole bunch of cool events going on. Hattrick Lounge right on the parade route on 5th and Robert. I'll be posted up there starting pretty early on Saturday morning. And we'll have a lot of giveaways.
Saturday this year?
The parade's on Saturday.
Oh, man.
Parade's never on Sunday.
Yeah,
so the parade's on Saturday.
Is on Sunday.
So, you know, being a nice Irish Catholic boy myself, definitely excited about this holiday. So I'll be at
Hattrick
Lounge rationing out my Jameson intake because I'll be there until about 2 o'clock, and then I'll be heading over to Billy's on Grand where we're going to do some more giveaways. We're going to have Milk Stout Nitro featured at both places. And then on Sunday, St. Patrick's Day proper, I'm going to be with my friends at Halftime Rec day with a free photo booth for anybody that wants to get down there.
Oh, man, and I love Halftime.
I love Halftime.
Have been spent at in the sub-level of Halftime. Mm-hmm. Back when you could smoke...
Oh,
man,
yeah.
You couldn't even see from one end of the bocce court to the other, playing downstairs, drinking Jameson. I love that place.
And Halftime's just one of those all-time St. Paul bars where you get St. Paul, what St. Paul's all about.
It's
Paul neighborhood bars starts and stops right at Halftime.
No frills. No, I mean, just, you know, just people rubbing elbows, drinking beers.
And some sassy bartenders.
Yep. Yeah. Just phenomenal. Love that spot. Yeah. We're going to do a post-show party at halftime. We're going to let's do it. I love halftime.
It's not a bad idea. Maybe we should talk about that with Northern Lights.
Right?
Let's get a shuttle.
Yeah. We need a post-show sponsor. I think that should be a thing.
Not a bad idea.
We should get a show sponsor first.
Well, it's priorities, Drew. Priorities.
Then, if you'd like to sponsor the Minnesota Beer Cast, hit me up, Andrew Lee, at iHeartMedia.com.
Let's talk about some of the beers you brought with, Joe. You guys are, of course, famous for your Nitro Milk Stout, but you brought Flamingo Dreams with you, which is great. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is a new beer that's going to be hitting Minnesota around mid-April, I think. We're figuring out our shipping schedules right now, but first canning run is done. The beers that we're sampling right now is from a test batch, and I've heard that the berries come out even more in the final version. But it's something we're very excited about. Left Hand's going to be all over the place. I'm going to be doing a release party with our friends at Junction 70 out in Woodbury once we get our shipping schedule set up. But that first Monday it hits stores, you can find us out on their patio throwing these beers around.
So would you look at me with a bit of side eye if I were to say that I wanted to throw like a big scoop of vanilla bean into a big cup of this?
God, no. But I would recommend pouring the beer first and then adding them. ice cream second because the nitro doesn't play well if you pour it on top.
I would imagine that, yeah, that's
probably
a good
plan. Goes
the
same with milk stout nitro. It just makes some fantastic floats.
And you've also got a Wheels Goes Round that's it's on its way. Can you tell us about that one as well?
Yeah, Wheels Goes Round is our beer we make with the National MS Society. It's a raspberry lemon peel goza we've been making for 4 years. In the past, it's always been for our bike MS teams that we sponsor around the country, which we've raised over $3.5 million so far.
That's awesome, man.
Probably going to be passing $4 million this year. I've raised over $5,000 for my rides, and if anybody's seen me out in public, I am not a bike rider. I do not enjoy it, but I do enjoy raising money.
Why are you always
money.
Wearing those shorts, Joe?
Yeah, well, sex appeal, bud. Yeah, beer doesn't, you know, beer.
That's how he sells all that beer.
In this market, beer doesn't sell itself. I got to get out there. It's just a great cause, something near and dear to our hearts. But we made this as a limited release seasonal last year, and now it's a year-round beer. We've got it around some particular accounts around the city. Just did a tasting with it with our friends at Stinson Beer, Wine, and Spirits. They've
Love
got it out
guys.
There right now.
Love those
so,
guys.
Yeah, get out there and find it.
Fantastic.
And then keep your eye out for that Flamingo Dreams, because that's pretty dope.
Well, we are about out of time for this edition of the Minnesota Beercast. I want to say thank you to Surly for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
And taking part in the show. Thank you, Joe, from the Science Museum. How long is this Game Changers exhibit going to be running here?
It runs through May 5th.
May 5th. Plenty of time to come out here. And if video games have even been any part of your life, you know, growing up as a kid, or if your kids are into them, highly recommend coming out here and checking out this exhibit. It really is fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. Thanks, Joe Shea, for being a part of the show. Left Hand, amazing beer. And thanks for being a friend of the show. Thanks to Surly for being a friend of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thanks to all our listeners for being a friend of the show. We hope to see you on our Germany trip.
Keep an eye out in your liquor stores for Sound Into Color and One Man Mosh Pit coming soon to any liquor store near you.
And that'll do it for this week's
News. I guess that's going to do it. We'll see you next week. Cheers.
I casually mention the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.